2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com. I think Oscar will have slept on what happened at Monza, and he'll be more annoyed now than he was after the race.
If it happens again, and actually there is a championship that could be clinched on this, what do they do then?
I'd like to know whether he regrets giving that place back.
Charles is such a Baku specialist. He will be in pole contention. I'm still going Ferrari to win a race. I'm going to keep saying it until they do.
A definite change in tone from Toto Wolff with regards Kimi Antonelli. He talked of him having an underwhelming weekend at Monza.
Baku's not the sort of track you want to go to with a bit of pressure on you.
If I'd said to you before the start of the season, Carlos Sainz is going to be 18th, what would you have made of that?
Maybe it's difficult when you've gone from fighting right at the front to fighting in the midfield.
The next few races are crucial for Colapinto.
He has to get some points on the board. Otherwise, he's looking over his shoulder.
From the Royal Park at Monza to the high-speed streets of Baku, a very different location, even if the two racetracks have more in common than meets the eye. Welcome, everyone, to F1 Nation's preview of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and Jolyon Palmer is my teammate for this episode, and hopefully, JP, the show goes better than when you last raced in Baku in 2017.
Yeah.
Can you give us
a little reminder? I think you've got it written down, haven't you? The full deplorable weekend that I had. Because, remind me, because I'd forgotten quite how miserable it was.
Crashed in FP1, missed FP2, had a fuel leak and a fire in FP3, which meant you missed qualifying. Started 20th, had a misfire on the way to the grid, and retired from the race with an engine failure on lap 7. And you said at the time, it can't get worse than this. And I think you were right.
That was the last time I said that. And I think that must have been about correct. That line probably came out of my mouth a few times, to be fair, in 2017. But, oh, that was a bad weekend. Yeah, I remember. Because Friday was terrible. Got in the car for Saturday. And you're thinking, right, fresh start. Let's go. Let's get some laps in Baku. Tricky circuit. Got in the car. And it was a blaze in 2 laps. Barbecued down at turn 2. So yeah, they rebuilt the car for Sunday, and I thought, okay, at least starting from the pit lane, let's just get some laps on the board. It was a difficult season, and then went to the grid, misfiring, out. Please get me home. Oh, happy memories, TC.
Well, do you know what? The previous year, I remember you going toe-to-toe with K-Mag. That went better.
Yeah. I would say we were toe-to-toe for the back row of the grid. The previous
year. It wasn't a great weekend for Renault, but in terms of where you were at.
Yeah, thanks for admitting that bit. I like the place. I like Baku. The track never did me very well, though. So,
JP, there's something magnificent about Baku. There's that ridiculously long 2.2-kilometre pit straight. You've got those high-speed sections, but all between walls.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a unique racetrack, isn't it?
It is a lot of fun. It's a good challenge to drive. You've got big braking zones in the first half. The walls in the middle part. So where I had my Friday crash last time I raced there, 2017, was that castle section. And yeah, it was so close to sort of finding the curb at the apex and then pitching yourself into the barrier on the outside. I was thankfully not the only plonker that managed to do that. And now they've opened it up a little bit there, so it's not quite as perilous. But then you've got this massive straight at the end of the final corner, blasting, was it 2 kilometres down towards the first turn? The braking zone comes straight at the end of the lap. The start finish is so late. It is another unique test.
Well, Azerbaijan is known as the land of fire. So let's start by talking about McLaren.
Oh, we're not going to talk anymore about my fiery 2017 car. Proved it.
An 8-1-2 of the season will guarantee the team a second consecutive Constructors' Championship with 7 races still to go, unbelievably. But let's talk about how they're handling the Drivers' Championship battle.
Do you want to box the other car first?
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll swap it round, so stay out.
Well, only if he doesn't undercut, otherwise I'll box first.
There will be no undercut.
What's going on with Lando Norris? The slow stop has cost Lando Norris track position. Through goes Oscar Piastri.
Oscar, this is a bit like Hungary last year. We pitted in this order for team reasons. Please let Lando pass and you're free to race.
We said that a slow pit stop was part of racing. I don't really get what changed here.
Team order issued. Team order listened to. Lando Norris restored to second place.
Team principal Andrea Stella spoke to us after that awkward moment at the Italian Grand Prix. One thing he said that was particularly interesting was about how McLaren have learned lessons from the past.
We have studied what has happened in the history of Formula One. It would have been, I think, naive not to take into account the lessons learned, even if it involved other people. And that's what we have used to create our principles, in addition to just bringing our own way, our own values to go racing.
Now, JP, McLaren are committed to those principles. And you wrote a piece on the F1 website about McLaren, posing the question, when should a team interfere and when is it just plain bad luck? What were your conclusions?
I didn't love the outcome of Monza. I mean, either way, it wasn't great, was it? Because you've got, firstly, the driver for second and third that deserved to be second, actually going to end up in third with the bad pit stop. And that was going to be Lando, who had the bad luck in Zandvoort already. So it felt like it was a real crushing blow when he had the pit stop. But the big decision was to reverse that. And to me and to DC in the commentary box at the time, we were... It just didn't feel like it was the right decision for the team to sort of interfere, manipulate the result between two drivers that are going for the championship. And I think that's the interesting thing is there only one of those guys will win the championship. So to actually have to give up a position that you've lucked into if you're Oscar in that position, but he's had bad luck go against him. Lando's, you know, we talked about luck a lot in the last few weeks on this podcast, and it goes both ways. But for the team to override that, I think was a bit of a tricky precedent, and there's still 8 races to go. So I think the drivers did the right thing to adhere to the team. I don't think if you're Oscar, you could have possibly ignored the team because, you know, there's too much still riding on it. There's 8 races. You don't want to alienate yourself. But for the team to interfere, I can understand all the logic for it. You know, they were sequencing the pit stops. They felt that they'd given Lando an unlucky break, which they had with the slow pit stop. But to actually bring that result back to what they think it should be is a difficult precedent because these things will happen again.
You say the drivers did the right thing. Had it been for the win,
would have been interesting. I don't know if they would have swapped. I think probably because of the way that McLaren have got the team, Oscar still would have done. I think he would have done. But then you're looking at a 14-point swing. So as it was second and third, it's a 6-point swing, 3 points plus or minus. And it's a little bit more palatable. 31 points is still very much bulls in Oscar's court. But yeah, there's so many questions. If this thing happened in Abu Dhabi, TC, if it happens again... And actually, there is a championship that could be clinched on this. What do they do then? You know, there's a lot more questions than we have answers at the moment.
Well, I'd love to know what Oscar Piastri is thinking today, the Monday before the Baku Grand Prix. He's had a week to think about it. I'd like to know whether he regrets giving that place back.
It's a tricky one. I don't think he can regret it. I think he has to be clear in his mind that actually, he was the second best McLaren driver in Monza. He didn't get lucky, but he deserved to finish behind Lando in terms of his driving merit. But then the problem is, and what him and probably his management, his entourage will be thinking is, well, hang on. In Budapest, we got unlucky. Lando got put on the better strategy. Oscar was a long way ahead of him with George Russell in the way as a big buffer. And yet suddenly they get to the last stint of the race and Lando's winning. Oscar's second. Oscar was the lead driver by far. And yet they didn't get the reversal in that final stint for a Lando pit stop. So Oscar wins and Lando's second, which is where their driving skill would have merited on that day. And that was for a win. So I think, you know, for his mindset, he has to try and blank it out and think about Baku. But there must be some moments where he thinks, well, hang on, there's been a few times now where he's not had that reversal.
I think there are going to be ramifications. I think McLaren have created a problem. I mean, who deems what's fair? If in Baku this weekend, Lando does a 1.8 second stop and Oscar does a 2.8 second stop. Is that unfair on Oscar?
I'm
exaggerating the point, but where do you draw the line?
McLaren seems so intent on not interfering, but yet they've interfered now to help Lando with a 3-point swing. I wonder also if they would have done the same decision had Zandvoort not happened. If the gap wasn't at 34 points, if Lando hadn't have been unlucky in Zandvoort to lose the points, would they have acted so quickly to reverse that one in Monza? I'm not sure. And you can certainly point at a few things for Oscar where he's been unlucky and it's not been turned around. Even the Silverstone penalty, which I think was, I still personally think was a harsh one, where he actually asked for it to be turned around if McLaren thought it was harsh. You can guarantee if it was his penalty and Max is going to win, they would have thought it was harsh. But because Lando won, that was fine. And at the time, it felt like the right decision from McLaren as well. But I guess the question is, how do they manage this moving forward? Because what's done in Monza is done. It's 31 points. Again, Lando, I think, deserved to narrow the gap. It's only 3 points. It's not a massive one for Oscar. But you just feel like, as you say, there's going to be times where a slow pit stop happens again, a bit of mismanagement happens again, maybe a bad strategy, maybe something where a driver will lose out some points. And how do they manage to resolve it again?
I think they're overcomplicating it. I think all that is expected of a race team is to give their drivers the same technical opportunity. You've got to turn up with the same bits on both cars at every Grand Prix. After that, go for your life. You know, McLaren got themselves into trouble at Monza because they were being greedy with the strategy. They were staying out for as long as possible in the hope of a safety car. And then that brought them into the clutches of Charles Leclerc. They were being greedy. I think when you have such an advantage in the Constructors' Championship, then I don't think you need to be so greedy. I think you now just have to focus on giving both drivers an equal opportunity. And if that means not focusing on a win, so be it. If Max Verstappen's up the road and the only way you can beat him is with a safety car by staying out long, I think you sacrifice that to ensure that you don't give one driver an advantage over the other strategically.
And that's what we've seen already this year is the two sides of the garage going up against each other strategically, which was Budapest in the end. Do you remember Austria? Lando was winning and then Oscar was going to pit. Lando decided to pit first. So Oscar was given the choice to go long or to do something different or to pit and stay close to him. He went longer. We never saw them interact again in the race. But even in Spa, you had Oscar pit. The next lap, Lando pits and they go for the hard tyre just to try something different to throw at Oscar. Again, would that have been fair if that hard tyre had have been the right choice and Lando had come through to win the race? It would have been a harsh one on Oscar on that day, who was the lead driver, and yet they threw something as an opportunity for Lando to try and beat him. And there are these cases so far where they've come up, but when Oscar's the second driver in Monza, now the difference is they weren't winning in Monza, so they were trying both to beat Max. But as you say, they will be Constructors' Champions. They can't win every race. On the day, Max was 6 seconds clear and was gonna win unless they got very lucky. But why at the pit stop phase didn't they let Oscar try and do something different to Lando? Try and pit earlier, try and undercut. Instead, they managed it, which was perfect for Lando, who was given the assurance that he wasn't going to be undercut. That's the dream scenario until he has the unlucky pit stop, the long pit stop, and then he's given the place back again. So it's a tricky position. I think it comes from the fact that they were not winning the race in Monza, and they have been at the other ones. But if it happens again, you make a precedent with all of these decisions. And I think it was such a quick decision, wasn't it, in Monza as well? They didn't have a lot of time to think about it and all the ramifications moving forward.
I wonder what Max Verstappen is making of it. This, you know, Max Verstappen, the man who was gifted P6 at the Brazilian Grand Prix in 2022 by his teammate so that maybe he could have a crack at Alonso ahead of him. Didn't pass Alonso, refused to give the place back to Checo at the end of the race. You know, just compare and contrast the ferociousness, I think is probably the right word, of someone like Max versus the McLaren drivers. JP, I have never in 30 years of covering Formula One seen a team have such a hold over both drivers, ever.
In part, it's actually impressive that they've managed to get 17 races through the season. Only one of the drivers will win the championship, and yet they are harmonious. They work together. They're both very pleasant. They're so evenly matched. You could make an argument for either one deserving the title, and yet there's no fisticuffs. They're not trying to run each other off the track. It's not blown up, because when Andrea Stella's talking about the history of Formula One, they've looked through it and they've seen how things go wrong. We're thinking Hamilton and Rosberg, famously. But also you could throw it to Hamilton and Alonso, famously. Prost and Senna, famously. When teammates and only one driver from the team can win a title, there's no external influences. These things normally go out into a brawl, and you start to try and hide information from your teammate. You start to try and do all levels of skullduggery to win. You take risks. There's going to be contact. There was the clash in Canada, but that's it. And that was just a hands-up mistake from Lando. But so I think that you have to say McLaren have done well to manage it. But then, you know, is it going to be bubbling away when then these decisions are coming in and one driver's thinking maybe they've been left out of the picture slightly?
Well, do you see Baku as a two-horse race? Is it going to be all about the McLarens? Are we going to see them lining up on the front row of the grid and going at it? Or do you think there are going to be external influences like maybe a Leclerc Ferrari or a Verstappen Red Bull?
I think probably those are the two. That I think they will be external influences. And it makes it a lot more dynamic, doesn't it? And that's, I think, a little bit like Monza. You know, the teammates are looking at each other. So before the Italian Grand Prix, I was thinking, how does Lando Norris approach this? Because he obviously wants to win the race, but he has to beat Oscar. So if Oscar starts to try and undercut Lando or do something different to Lando to try and beat him from behind, Lando firstly has to cover Oscar, because that's more important to him than winning the race. We heard a similar thing in Hungary when Oscar was more fussed about beating Lando than Charles Leclerc, who was winning. And that's the fascinating dynamic now between the two McLarens. It didn't play out because in Monza they obviously got into this sequencing of pit stops that was about optimizing performance rather than going at it. But in other races they have been going at it. And I think in Baku we are going to see Verstappen quick again. The Red Bull's very good in low downforce. We're definitely going to see Leclerc because he is majestic around Baku. I'd say it's probably his best circuit on the calendar. So I think those two will be there with the two McLarens. And then what do you do? Because you want to win the race, but you have to beat your teammate, firstly.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it's now about beating your teammate if you drive for McLaren, more than anything else.
100%. It's worth more to be cautious and cement a 3-point gain than to take risk. But if Lando had have not beaten Oscar, then the points gap goes towards 40. It's not worth that risk. He has to keep narrowing it down at this stage, even if he doesn't get the top prize at the end on Sunday, which is a big advantage to the other guys, to Max, to Charles, who knows, maybe a George Russell, a Lewis Hamilton, any of the other guys to try and come in. Because the McLarens can't only concentrate on winning the race.
And JP, what's your gut telling you? Do you think the gloves are going to come off now?
No.
You still think it's going to be benign? It's almost...
What do you think? Are you thinking it's gloves off time?
Yeah, I am. And I think we're going to see, certainly on Oscar's side, my gut is telling me that I think Oscar will have slept on what happened at Monza and he'll be more annoyed now than he was on Sunday night after the race.
I agree with that. I think in the race, he'll have accepted that he was probably the second quickest, take a small difference. He was set for third, he'll finish third. But then you can't help but think about it and think, everything that I've said, and I'm sure he'll have more examples in his head of things that have not gone his way or that he perceives have not gone his way. Probably Lando's, you know, having the same thoughts about equality in the team. Even, hey, when I was driving and I was having my worst ever weekend in Baku, I was thinking, all drivers are thinking, how is the equality in the team? Because you're driving the same car, you want an equal opportunity, but you're thinking, am I getting the love of the team? Am I getting the new parts, the best strategy, the best pit stops? Why is Lando's pit stops routinely fractionally slower than Oscar's or very much slower in Monza? And you start to think, why are these things not quite falling in my favour? So both of them will be thinking that. But yeah, will we see one of them be a little bit more killer in Baku? I don't know. I think the way that McLaren are managing this is quite contrived, to be fair, but they have got two compliant drivers still, and I don't know if it's going to change yet.
Publicly, I think you're right. I don't think Oscar's going to walk into the press conference on Thursday and start mouthing off, but I think internally he's going to start banging the table a bit.
It'll weigh heavy on him, won't it? And it works because the team will now start to think, did we definitely handle that right in Monza? So, you know, you have to bang the table for everything that you can get. And, hey, I don't know if this is going to be the one where it really comes to fruition. But at some point this year, it just has to because of the history of the Formula One title battles. It surely something has to give.
Support for today's episode comes from Square, the system powering pretty much half the places I shop at. If you've ever tapped to pay and thought, that was fast, it was probably Square. Whether you're selling coffee, cutting hair, or running a homemade craft stand, Square can help you run your business without running yourself into the ground, because having access to the right tools is what makes all the difference. And right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/F1Nation. That's square.com/go/F1Nation. Square isn't just fast, it's smart and reliable. It accepts every payment method, one tap, chip and pin, Apple Pay, and even online purchases. You can track your sales and inventory in real time, and Square's slick banking system means you can even get immediate access to your earnings. No contracts, no hidden fees, no complicated installs, just tools that are built to help you run your business with ease. I love it when I spot a business using Square because I know as a customer I'm getting fuss-free service. And if they've got one of their loyalty schemes in place, that's even better. It's a surefire way to keep me coming back for more. If you're starting a business or running one that deserves better tools, Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/F1Nation. That's square.com/go/F1Nation. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. 2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com. McLaren's mission to keep the title fight fair between their drivers could, as you were saying earlier, JP, be complicated by an outside influence. Let's talk about Max Verstappen, first of all. Prior to the summer break, he said he didn't think he could win another race this year. He seems to have got his mojo back. He has won again. How seriously do you think he can challenge this weekend?
I expect him to be right there again. I think the key thing is that the Red Bull is competitive in the low downforce configuration. They obviously found something in Monza. They found a good balance to go with the trimmed out wing. Baku, they'll be trimming out that wing again to a similar level, maybe not quite as low downforce as Monza. But think back to Silverstone. Max was on pole with the low downforce Red Bull. It didn't help him when it rained on Sunday, but he was quick. Jeddah, he was on pole in the lower downforce Red Bull. So any time where you start taking the downforce off, even the Spa sprint, he didn't take pole, but he won the sprint because he likes that car in that configuration. He can hustle it round. He doesn't mind the floaty feeling. He gains on the straights and doesn't lose so much in the corners, basically. It's not one of his best circuits historically, but I still think with the way he's going and the way that Red Bull are, he'll be a threat.
I mean, he was out-qualified by Checo Perez last year for the first time in 2024.
Yeah.
So it would suggest it's not one of his best circuits. Do you worry about the bumps in Baku? That's something that's held that car back historically.
I think they've got a much better handle on the bumps now, though, as well. So, I mean, you need to be able to hop over curbs as much as the bumps as well. There are some big braking zones. I don't think in Baku it's actually so bad now. It's been smoothed out quite a lot. It's not horrendously bumpy like a Monaco or a Singapore. Curb riding certainly plays its part, but it also does in Monza, to be honest, as well, where the car was good hopping over the curbs at low speed. And that's what they'll be doing in Baku. So this was also Perez's best track by far, I'd say, Baku. He was always very, very fast. It was one of his good wins as well in the past. So maybe we'll give Checo that.
Checo, short radius corners. That's what everyone said to me. Brilliant at short radius corners. What about Max? Max's approach? Can we just discuss that? Since the management change, the team principal change from Christian Horner to Laurent Mekies, they've slightly changed how they go about their race weekends. They're not relying blindly on what the simulator says on Friday night. They say that they're now letting Max lead the charge from the racetrack rather than the sim. How significant a change do you think that is?
I think putting less emphasis on the sim is a big change because, you know, that is all about how you turn up to a race, put the car on the ground, and how many times have we seen them be really struggling on a Friday and then find something on Saturday in the past? So if they're starting to put less emphasis on that and trust their driver, then it says more about what needs to improve back at Milton Keynes probably for Red Bull, and that they are going to trust Max, and it will probably make a difference to how they run through the weekend. But even in Zandvoort, I remember Max was struggling a lot on Friday, still managed to get it into good position on Saturday. He was in the top three, finished on the podium, finished second, didn't he, when Lando was out. So it didn't massively change their world. But, you know, Max is obviously a top-line driver. He's very forthright in his opinions, and he knows what he wants from the car. So Red Bull are probably well-advised to go with that. And, you know, if they have a weakness in the sim, which they seem to have had for a little bit of time, then that's something that they'll work on. I haven't noticed a massive change. I know that's something that's been going on behind the scenes, but in terms of the bullish approach from Max on track. We saw it 100% once again in Monza, going through the first chicane, trying everything to hold back Lando at the start. He then gave up the position, but then the move was really well executed when he then did pass Lando again. I'm still seeing that ruthlessness from him on track. You know, I still think the team hasn't done a massive change in direction in the short term. What do you think from what you've seen?
I think I agree with you. Do you see that Max has been to the Nürburgring?
I have seen this.
Since Monza. He's been... There's no such thing as a weekend off for that guy, is there? I've never met anyone who loves driving quite as much as Max Verstappen. He was getting a license so that he can do a GT3 race later in the month around the Nordschleife. But, you know, weekend off, head up, you know, into
well,
the mountains.
Well, he's not got a leg to stand on when the Formula One calendar gets bigger and bigger, has he? Because
yes.
He goes racing as when he's not racing. He races in the night. When he's racing in the day, he'll jump on the sim sometimes. He lives for racing. It's something else. I wouldn't have been doing that when I was driving.
Funnily, if it's a generational thing, JP, because Gabriel Bortoleto was on Beyond the Grid recently and saying, you know, on the Sunday night of a Grand Prix, he was talking specifically about Zandvoort. On the Sunday night, he goes home having raced a Grand Prix and then will sit on the sim and do however many laps on the sim of Zandvoort, just sort of honing the car, learning extra information that he'd gathered over the weekend.
Fair play.
These guys don't stop.
Fair play. I can't keep up with that. That's it's a new generation thing, isn't it, as you say? Sim era, sim racing, all of it they've grown up with, and it's a hobby for them as much as, you know, work as well. When I finished a race, if someone had said, right, go and jump on the sim on a Sunday, I would normally go in on like a Tuesday or Wednesday, and that would be one of the less glamorous bits of my job. But to hop on a Sunday night, you're having a laugh.
Extraordinary. And I agree with you. I think Max will go well this weekend. I do sense that he's stepped up a little bit internally. It may be an unconscious thing, but I think... I think he's really trying to welcome Laurent Mekies with open arms. And I think I noticed he was at Milton Keynes on his way to the Nürburgring last week. Lots of selfies with the team. I feel that he's got a more prominent role, leadership role within the team post-Horner, perhaps.
He's probably is empowered,
than he
isn't
had
he?
Before.
Obviously, he's been now at the team for a long time. Laurent's stepped over to Red Bull. And Max, as the champion driver, I think you look at some of the great champions of the past, they do have an important role to play. I mean, Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes, but Toto Wolff was there the whole time. Sebastian Vettel, when he was at Red Bull and then even at Ferrari, wasn't a champion with them. But you could feel that he had that champion quality of knowing where the team should go and that imposing nature. And now Max has seen the end of Christian Horner's tenure. In comes Laurent Mekies. And Laurent's a more technical-minded boss as well. So, they, you know, he probably feels like this is his time to put extra effort into making sure that the next era is good.
Let's talk about Ferrari now. Charles Leclerc, you said earlier, is a Baku specialist. And my goodness, he is. Pole position for the last 4 years in
Amazing.
Baku. Extraordinary record. Do you think he's going to have the car underneath him to get the job done on Sunday?
I think he can, yeah. I still think that Ferrari, I feel like they've underperformed a little bit recently for their car. I think in Monza, in the end, they weren't that far away. I know Charles struggled in the early part of the race and was overtaken by Oscar, having had the dice with him at the start. But they were super low downforce then, and there's probably a better compromise to be had. And Baku, they'll probably find it because it's a slightly different track where you need a bit more cornering. But there's certain races where I think they've been riding contention and not quite landed it, whether it's driver mistakes, whether it's team mistakes. And because I think Charles is such a Baku specialist, he will be in pole contention. This is the sort of circuit where he just delivers the laps. And there's been a few. Monza, I thought probably they had a little bit more in the locker, but didn't find it on that final run. He was second after the first run of Q3 and then dropped back. Race pace, it's not as good as quali pace. But if he starts at the front, I think I'm still going with it. I'm still going Ferrari to win a race, and I'm going to keep saying it until they do. I also think Singapore, by the way, will be their chance. I think this run of three races, Monza's been and gone, missed opportunity. Baku, brilliant opportunity, more for Charles because of his Baku specialist nature. But then Singapore as well, for both of their drivers, really good form, and the car will be good. So this is their run.
All right, what about Mercedes? They're 20 points back on Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship. A definite change in tone after the Monza Grand Prix from Toto Wolff with regards Kimi Antonelli. He talked of him having an underwhelming weekend at Monza and that in Baku he has to have a clean weekend. Be interesting to see how 19-year-old Kimi will deal with that.
What did you think of that remark from Toto? Because he's been very much arm round him until that moment, hasn't he?
I was quite taken aback. I was surprised, actually, because his every comment with regards Kimi Antonelli this year has been, this is a building year, all about getting experience, we're going to learn from our mistakes. So I think they want to announce their driver lineup for 2026, and they're trying to wait for the right moment, and they don't want to do it after a run of bad races, which he's had.
So they've had enough of the carrot, and now they just do a little wave of the stick now and see if he can get a good one on the board and confirm. I also personally thought he didn't have such a terrible weekend in Monza. He, looking at qualifying pace, which is the first benchmark of how just naturally fast a driver is, he was half a tenth off George. He was closer to George Russell than Lewis was the year before. He went off in Friday practice in FP2 early on. So he did that, making up for lost time. Now, that in itself is its own concern because he did the same in Zandvoort. So that's partly one of Toto's comments, is he has to have a clean weekend. And if he'd have done three free practices in Zandvoort and in Monza, who knows, maybe he'd have out-qualified George at the end. But in terms of his pace, it was his best showing since Miami. So that was really encouraging. He got a lousy start, fell down into the mid-pack, 10th, 11th, and came back, you know, not massively with aplomb. And so that's where the gap opened up between him and George Russell. But I think George is driving at such a high level. Kimi's still 19. I think the fact that his pace was much more on a par, he qualified sixth. If he gets a better start, I think he's probably going to finish there as well. I thought it was better, but that's why I was also surprised that was the moment where Toto sort of came out a little bit more, putting the pressure on. And Baku's not the sort of track you want to go to with a bit of pressure on you.
It's a much more difficult racetrack, isn't it? I mean, Monza actually is quite a simple racetrack in a Formula One car, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's...
Layout-wise.
Yeah, I think it's the simplest. You basically have six corners to deal with. Low downforce makes it slightly harder, but a couple of chicanes, a couple of Lesmos, Ascari and Parabolica, and you're booming round to the end of the lap. Baku is complex because you've got those long straights, big braking zones, similar to Monza. But then the middle sector, if you make a mistake like he's had in Zandvoort or Monza, that will be tearing off two corners of the car in Baku. Even worse in Singapore next time out as well. And then I actually, as a driver, I hated the run out of the final corner because I feel like that is just down to, please let me come around turn 16, the final proper corner, and find a car to get a slipstream. Because it could be half a second on the run to the line. But if there's no one there, you can just lose all that time and someone can basically get a really lucky run to the flag. But it's still something that's there for the drivers. Corner exits are going to be key.
One thing I have been surprised about with Kimi is his qualifying pace. I know you say, yes, he was closer to George in Monza, but 15-1 is the head-to-head between those two drivers. And drivers can get more consistent, but the raw pace is normally there from the outset. So I was expecting Kimi to put it over George in qualifying more than he has. That's almost my biggest concern with Kimi, actually, is that I thought he would quite simply be faster on a Saturday.
But I think that's why I was more encouraged by Monza, because he was quicker. And even if he'd put in a better weekend, but he was 2/10 away from George still, I'd rather he was 0.5 away from George or pretty much matching George. and then making some mistakes here or there, because the pace is the hardest thing to find. So a couple of things. He has statistically been getting further away from George as the season's gone on. So if you take the first five races, then the next five, and then the next five, up until Monza, that gap has been widening, which is obviously not what you'd expect from an 18-year-old rookie. You'd think that he'd be working it out and getting closer. Still think George is driving at a really high level, but Kimi has lost his way a little bit, and he's lost the confidence. He's no longer driving purely on instinct, and when he does, he's then finding himself in the gravel as well. So he's sort of, I feel like he's missing some laps, some reps, some rhythm in his driving, and then he's feeling the pressure as well, which isn't helping. And it also makes me think, why were we necessarily thinking an 18-year-old rookie was going to come in and do better than he's doing? Because of the hype.
Two words. Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen has distorted what we expect of teenagers now.
Okay. Max Verstappen came in alongside rookie Carlos Sainz. If you put Kimi in alongside rookie Isaac Hadjar, it would be a lot closer than you think. We'd be thinking, wow, the 18-year-old has got some amazing results. He's made some bloopers. It wouldn't be as drastic. If you put Max in 2015 alongside peak Sebastian Vettel, it's probably not going to go that well for Max. There might be the odd glimpse of some highs, but to drive at the level that a George Russell's doing right now, he's driving a champion season in not the best car. The consistency of his performance is incredible, and I feel like if you gave him a McLaren right now, he's on a par in terms of his driving standard with Lando and Oscar, at least. Same with Max, and that's the benchmark that we're giving Kimi. And I know he was a sensation in karting, and he was very good in Formula Renault, Formula European Regional. But he's skipped F3. He's done 1 year of solid F2, but nothing really more. The odd spectacular drive, but the odd error as well. And he's in Formula One. And I still think he's talented. I still think he's good. But I think he needs to just get back to solid weekends and think, maybe I just need to be a solid Formula One driver first.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Well, JP, that's all the big hitters. For Baku, can we look at the bottom end of the championship order now? Because it makes interesting reading. The bottom three in the Drivers' Championship at the minute are Carlos Sainz, 18th. Carlos Sainz! Yuki Tsunoda, 19th in a Red Bull. And Franco Colapinto, 20th. Okay, he missed the first six races of the season. Are you surprised that it's those three? If I'd said to you before the start of the season, we're going to be going with eight races to go and Carlos Sainz is going to be 18th, what would you have made of that?
If you'd told me that, I'd have said Williams are having a horrible season. But they're not, are they? They're actually having a really good season for them. So it says a lot about Alex Albon's ability and results at the moment. I don't think 18th is a fair representation of where Carlos has been in terms of his performance. But, you know, the facts are the facts, and he hasn't got the points on the board. And I feel like he's just getting involved in too many incidents as well. And I know he just had his penalty overturned from Zandvoort, which I think was the right decision. But the fact is, he still had the collision. And even if this is no longer his fault, he still lost points on the day. They were fighting for seventh, him and Liam Lawson. He was hanging out halfway around the outside of Liam. Maybe you could say it's Lawson's fault. Maybe you could say it's a racing incident. It doesn't even matter. That's points lost for him. And the same in Monza. He went around the outside of Ollie Behrman. They had the collision. Behrman kept his nose in at the apex. The stewards gave Behrman the penalty. Personally, I think that's harsh. I still think that Haas could even appeal that and get the 2 points overturned for him. But it doesn't matter. It's another points chance gone for Sainz. So whether or not he's in the right or he's in the wrong, and he's not been very happy about it, he's having too many of these collisions. In Bahrain, it was the same. He was having a collision with Antonelli. There are so many races this year where he's been in that midfield, bottom end of the points fight and just had some racing incidents. And probably he needs to start looking a little bit more at himself. He's been unlucky at times as well with safety cars and strategies and DNFs, but I think he's not maximised the car.
I think what surprised me about those two Williams drivers is that I was expecting Carlos's experience to really show in a race, and I was expecting him to maybe be the better racing driver, but that's absolutely not been the case. As you say, it's partly getting involved in other people's accidents or whatever. And just, you know, Albon has driven really, really well. Maximized most opportunities, you have to say.
It goes to show how you put a season together. So Albon's on 70 points. Sainz is on 16 points. In qualifying, there's not that much in it between them.
8-8, they're level.
Yeah, and in terms of the average pace as well, they're really similar. So there's not much to separate them in terms of one lap performance. I agree. I think Sainz's success in his career has been about putting race weekends together. I remember particularly his McLaren days when he was teammates with Lando. And again, the two of them were really evenly matched in qualifying, but cars would get good starts. He'd make good overtakes, be really clean and crisp, get good results. Where Lando would maybe be, you know, he'd have some good highs as well, but occasionally he was a rookie at the time and he'd make a bad start. He'd drop back into traffic. He'd then fight through, and Carlos was just putting it together. That's why he went to Ferrari. And he did a really great job at Ferrari as well, bearing in mind Charles was his teammate and we respect Charles as one of the best drivers in the field. But this year, it's not gone right for him. I think maybe maybe it's difficult when you've gone from fighting right at the front to fighting in the midfield. Because when you're a Ferrari driver and you're fighting with a Red Bull, a McLaren or a Mercedes, there's a little bit more to lose for a podium fight sometimes. You're sometimes fighting with drivers that are in championship battles, championship contention. They don't take the risk that Liam Lawson will in the midfield. And Ollie Behrman in Monza, he's also down there in the championship. 1 point to him is huge. So he will chuck a nose in at the second chicane. Whereas possibly at the front of the field, the drivers are a little bit more circumspect. The difference between a fourth and a fifth isn't massive to them. So I wonder if that changes the racing aspect for Carlos and he needs to recalibrate. At the same time, Alex has been doing amazing. Coming through the field, he is piecing it together as Carlos has in the past.
What about Yuki Tsunoda then? You know, the hardest job in Formula One, being Max Verstappen's teammate. But he's only scored once since Imola. I was expecting a little bit more of Yuki in the same way that I was Carlos.
Yeah, honestly, you can't be expecting less from Yuki. If you'd have told me him at the start of the year that Yuki's 19th in the championship, I'd have thought, first of all, there's no way he's driving a Red Bull for most of this. Because, you know, sometimes Checo had a hard time, but he's still got some results in the Red Bull. But this year, the performance of the second Red Bull has completely fallen off the cliff entirely. The result that he did get in Zandvoort, he got ninth, as Isaac Hadjar got a podium for Racing Bulls. So it says a huge amount about how difficult the second Red Bull seat is. I think we've seen a similar spiral of confidence as we saw with Checo last year as well, struggling. So you try different things, you can't find your feet, you can't find your balance, and you have to run the car slightly differently to Max, who's just got an incredible feel for grip and balance that the second driver doesn't quite have the skill set to do. So you end up having a two-car team in Red Bull. And yeah, Yuki, he's seemed a little bit better since Laurent's taken over at Red Bull. But even his race in Monza, it was very underwhelming in terms of he didn't look like he had any confidence. Braking early, not getting into battles, not defending position in the edge of the top 10, and eventually having contact with Liam Lawson.
Look, last one, Franco Colapinto. Okay, I said a minute ago, you know, he missed those opening six races. It feels that he's going better since the summer break. This weekend in Baku, he's returning to the scene of his first points in Formula One last year when he finished eighth from a Q3 start. Do you think he's making progress? Do you think he deserves that second seat next year at Alpine?
Monza was much better for him. And you're right, going back to circuits that he's at least done last year, I think he can arrive just feeling that little bit more comfortable. It's not completely alien to him. Remember, he didn't do pre-season testing, so being parachuted in partway through the season is never that nice. Is what he did a much better job of at Williams than he has done at Alpine. It will be interesting to see if he does better in Baku and Singapore, because he actually did a really good job for Williams last year. And he did do better in Monza, having driven his debut last year. So coming back helped him there. I don't think he's done enough to stay on the grid as it is. But then you wonder who's definitely going to come in to replace him. I think Alpine would love him to find some more performance to keep him. He's getting closer to Pierre, and Pierre's a good benchmark. Obviously, he had his new contract in Monza. But there's a lot of hungry talent coming through in F2 that would love a chance. And I think Franco Colapinto's seat has got to be the most vulnerable. What do you reckon?
It's boring for a podcast, but I agree. It's better if we disagree, right? But as things stand, he's not doing enough. But I have seen little flickers of hope since the summer break. I thought his race in Zandvoort was very good, just missed out on the points. As you say, it was better in Monza. He's going to go to Baku with confidence. I'm sure at some subliminal level, he's going there thinking, hang on, I scored points here last year. I go well at this racetrack. So I think as long as he doesn't put it in the wall in FP1 through overconfidence, I think it could be a good weekend for him. And then let's see where we go. Flavio Briatore has said that they want to make a decision about next year's driver lineup before the end of the season in November. So the next few races are crucial for Colapinto.
Yeah, I think these two, he has to get some points on the board. He has to out-qualify Gasly. Otherwise, he's looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, and he is the only driver on the grid who has yet to score this year. Well, JP, it's been brilliant to chat. Quick constructors permutations. As I said earlier, McLaren will be constructors champions for the 10th time if they leave Baku 346 points ahead of the team in P2. They're currently 337 points ahead of Ferrari. Those are insane numbers, aren't they?
Oh, the jeopardy. Imagine if they don't do it and it rolls on another week. Then the scores that they have this year is just phenomenal how they've managed to put this together. Oh, they only just won the Constructors last year. And then this year, they could outscore Red Bull's 2023 total, which is bonkers.
So what about the podium in Baku, JP? Give us your 1, 2, 3.
I'm gonna stick to my guns. Charles Leclerc wins the race. He takes pole. He hangs on, learns from last year. And so he wins. Then it's going to be... it's got to be a McLaren fighting in the whole way. Let's go with Oscar to do it. He did a great job in Baku last year. And Max for P3. I don't think McLaren are going to have it their own way. So I'm going to go 1 Ferrari, 2 McLaren, 3 Red Bull.
I know Oscar was brilliant last year in Baku. And that overtake on Charles Leclerc was one of the best, and then he had Leclerc on his gearbox for the rest of the race. All of that was sublime. But I thought Lando Norris had a very good race from P15 on the grid as well. Let's not overlook that.
Hey, it was a spectacular recovery, wasn't it? Kept him in the hunt.
Well, I'm going to go for a Verstappen win and then the two McLarens.
In which order?
I just...
Depends who has the slowest stop.
Boom. You said it. Look, any outliers, any surprises? Do you think Hadjar could go and lay a surprise? Or?
I think Williams will go well again. So having spoken about Sainz being 18th in the championship, he'll have a great chance to score, and Albon as well. Their lower downforce package is pretty good. So maybe in a chaotic race, this is a chance for Williams, if they can sort out qualifying, to get right in amongst the Ferraris and the Mercedes. You know, they would have done that in Monza had they not qualified so badly. Albon's race pace was the same as Hamilton, similar to Russell. Maybe they'll prove it this time around.
Albon for the podium, perhaps.
Williams have JP. Got form. They've had podiums in the past. Think of Lance Stroll.
Lance Stroll, 2017. Yeah. Absolutely. JP, great to chat to you. Thank you very much for your time. One more thing before I go to people listening. This week's F1 Beyond the Grid is with Cadillac team principal Graham Loudon. That's out on Wednesday, and he gave great insight into the team's preparations ahead of its first race in just 6 months' time. Melbourne 2026 is only 6 months away. And as for F1 Nation, we will, of course, be back next week with our review of the race in Baku. Please follow or subscribe so you don't miss that. But for now, thanks very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.
...2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda Racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.